So I just got an email like 2 seconds ago from Claire, who is finally in New Zealand. Have you ever been in New Zealand, Wish?
I've never. The only place I've ever been overseas, Merrick, I'm not counting like the Caribbean, I'm not counting South America. I'm talking about the other continent area across the Atlantic or the Pacific is London. That's the only place I've ever been is London.
Oh, the Olympics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous, man, because her and Brody are there for like 10 days for a friend's wedding. And so,
all right.
Yeah. So it's pretty sweet. I'm just looking. She just sent me pictures. Holy smokes. New Zealand is gorgeous. We have a couple of people from New Zealand that tweet into the podcast and email. Tons from Australia, too, for whatever reason. Hey, Sasky. Hey, Emma. What's going on, girls? It's freaking gorgeous. Holy smokes. Like, of all the places in the world, like, wouldn't you love hockey to be, like, a truly international sport so we could have a reason to go to places like New Zealand and Australia, like, legitimate reasons to go and work? Because if you talk to – it's funny. I was talking to one of my trainers at the gym, and he played hockey. Mike's about 29 now. And he played – you know, he went to Ferris State and then played hockey in Europe for, like, the last 7 or 8 years. It's a great way to see the world. I'm looking at these pictures and I'm thinking to myself, you know, hockey's taken me some pretty cool places. I've got to meet some really neat people. I've got to see, obviously a lot of hockey rinks, drink a lot of bad coffee, smell Zamboni fumes for pretty much all my life, which I'm sure has shaved years off of my life. But it is a wonderful way to see the world. Like when you really get into this sport, it is a great way to see what's around. And that's why I'm not really protective of the sport. Like, I don't just want it to be a Canadian thing. Like, I'm happy when other countries do well.
Don't worry. It's not.
What's that? Oh, I know it's not. And that's a great thing. I just wish there was sort of more, you know, non-traditional hockey countries that, you know, had a more succinct than, you know, an accessible hockey culture.
It blows your mind when you hear stories about hockey in Israel and stuff like that.
Dude, I taught hockey in Israel for 2 weeks. In Matula, I told you that story. And so for 2 weeks,
right.
when would I ever go to Israel? Well, there I was, 2 weeks at the Canada Center in Matula, northern Israel, right on the border of Lebanon, teaching hockey to Jewish and Arab kids. It was one of the best experiences of my life. Like, if it weren't for hockey, I never would have gone. Never would have gone to Israel. Beautiful country.
So essentially, we just have to find ways to bring hockey to places that we want to go to so we can go to there.
Pretty much what I'm saying, yeah.
Right.
We have hockey in Belize now, please. Can we please bring hockey there?
Oh, that's the place I've been. That's like the other exotic locale I've been is Belize.
Really,
that was a really beautiful place, too.
You know, I'm one of the most surreal moments of my life when I was working at CBC during the 2008 Summer Games in Beijing. It was the second night we were all out for dinner at this great it's weird saying at this great Chinese restaurant. Of course, it's a Chinese restaurant. You're freaking China, dummy. I always catch myself. Oh, yeah, I was in Beijing. Went to this great Chinese restaurant. Stupid. They're all Chinese restaurants. So that's this great restaurant. And above the wine cellar there was pictures of Steve Yzerman. It was crazy. I got pictures of it back on my laptop at home. It's one of the most surreal moments of my life where you sort of like, where hockey sort of pops its head out, like you're playing whack-a-mole at the state fair. And all of a sudden, you know, hockey. Jumps out. There was pictures of Steve Yzerman around this wine cellar in downtown Beijing. Bizarre, surreal. But
That's really one of my favorite things in life is seeing hockey where you don't expect hockey.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like,
or meeting hockey people in weird locales too. Like you'll meet like a dude that played 5 games in the NHL when you're like in the deep south United States. Like, how'd you end up here? How'd you get here?
Right. Or random cab drivers that care about hockey, you know,
and know everything about it.
But I also like when you're looking at popular culture, be it movies or television or music, and all of a sudden hockey dips its toe into whatever you're looking at. Like the Capitals, who have provided us with the lovely and talented Carl Alsner today on the show,
thanks, Caps,
have trumpeted that JB Smoove. Of Curb Your Enthusiasm fame is going to be dressed up as a Capitals fan on a show called The Millers, including his big head painted blue. And it's that kind of like randomness that I always appreciated about hockey.
Did Wishes
when I was watching The Sopranos. No, I'm here. When I was watching The Sopranos one day and like A.J. Soprano had a devil's garbage can. Like,
awesome.
It makes sense. The show takes place in Jersey, whatever. They seem like the kind of family that might be into hockey. But just seeing his random little hockey things here and there.
But you know what?
Happy.
But you know what it does though, Wish. It does remind us and give us a great perspective on exactly how small hockey is, because it seems like a small victory when you see things like that. But I don't think football fans have the. You know, have that same kind of feeling, or baseball fans.
Oh, they don't care.
Right? It's just like, oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, he's a Browns fan. Yeah, and in this TV show. But if you find out someone's like a Dallas Stars fan, and there's like a Dallas Stars, someone, you know, is wearing a Dallas Stars t-shirt or hat or jersey in a show, it's like, yes, hockey is invaded. It really does sort of remind us how tiny this is in the big landscape.
It is, but at the same time, I also think that, like, it's like when you find out your favorite celebrity's politics and then you don't like them as much, you know. At the same time, if you find out your favorite celebrity is also a hockey fan, that increases the stock exponentially in that person. Like, you know, like
because it makes you feel like
example.
It makes you feel like you can actually have a conversation with that person. That there'd be a common frame of reference other than, hey, dude, I really love your work.
I happen to be a fan of Rachel McAdams, like most men, I believe. I know she's Canadian. I know the assumption is all Canadians like hockey, although once I found out Ryan Reynolds doesn't like hockey, I questioned everything I thought I knew about Canada, because he seemed like a dude that would like it. So the fact that she attended Stanley Cup final games, just, like, forget it, man. She might have left Scarlett Johansson in the dust on my list.
Really,
by
eh?
Simply being a hockey fan. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just looking, because you know me and pop culture.
Don't even. You don't know who she is?
Hey, she went to she's from London. She grew up in St. Thomas. So she grows up in Joe Thornton country.
Claire never made you suffer through The Notebook?
No.
Never?
No.
Oh, man.
No, she never did. Hey, she went to Western. Oh, okay, very good. And then went to York University. Oh,
Canuck cool. Fan at SF. Barry, the son on the TV show The Goldbergs, always wears a Flyers shirt. That's interesting because that show takes place in the 80s. So that makes kind of sense. Adrian Robin from How I Met Your Mother will occasionally get Canuck swag on the show. Well, yeah, and part of that character is being a Vancouver fan because she's so Canadian-centric and provided me with what remains one of my favorite lines in the history of How I Met Your Mother. When she is bragging about going to the Vancouver Rangers game with her boyfriend and bragging about all the fun they had. She's like, oh yeah, we got to go back to the locker room and I got to meet Mason Raymond. And then one of the guys in the show goes, what's the opposite of name dropping?
That's pretty hip line. Hang on, Rachel, she lives in Toronto at Harvard Village.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Did you hire a private detective?
No, Wikipedia, bro. Mm. Really, eh? That's like not like it's a nice part of town.
Adrian also points out Wedding Crashers. She was in Wedding Crashers. She was Owen Wilson's love interest.
Another movie I haven't seen. I'm just looking at the movies she's been in. I've seen none of them. That nope. Passion, Sherlock Holmes, Morning Glory. No, no. All of these.
Never saw Sherlock Holmes.
No, bro.
Wow.
I know. Television.
That's the thing.
No. Makes sense. No. It really does make sense that I would not know this person.
Indeed.
It's embarrassing.
What we need, though, is more NHL players on TV shows and in movies. Because for a while, we were getting, like, Bill Guerin on a soap opera. But that whole thing seems like it dried up. The last thing that we had were the Flyers, Hartnell and Ian LaPerriere and a few others that got into This Is 40, the Judd Apatow movie. But we need – you know what we need? We need an ex-NHLer in an Expendables movie. The Sly Stallone aging action stars movie.
Awesome.
We need someone
like
there.
Marty McSorley in the Expendables.
Yes.
Oh, that would be awesome. Okay, I get behind
some
that.
Some snarly...
Tony Twist would be perfect.
Oh, that's
perfect.
There you
go. Tony Twist.
Or Ty Domi would also be perfect. And I mean, like someone like that in an Expendables movie would be perfect.
Oh, I love that.
I see no reason why it shouldn't happen.
Yeah,
personally.
I wonder somewhere down the road. Let's do something on where you, the strangest place you found hockey. Let's write that down for some future program. I'm just wishing.
Newark, New Jersey.
Atlanta, Georgia. Twice.
Oops. What do you think Thrashers fans are doing these days, by the way? I know that we have a few. I think Tally is a Thrashers fan. She could probably tell us this.
Yeah, she lives in LA now.
What do you think they're doing now? Do you think they adopted the Jets?
I've always wondered about that. When your team leaves, what happens to you as a fan if there's no other option in that market for you? Like if there's no minor league market or junior hockey loop for you to follow, what happens to you? Do you just quit on hockey? Is that it?
Well, I know the Predators are trying to make inroads and get Thrashers fans to convert. That was the thing they tried to do.
Sure.
I don't know how many grab onto them fast.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how much of regionality the Predators have as far as that kind of thing goes. I don't know. Or do you feel so insulted that you give up on puck?
That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm wondering. Because the only experience I've had of a team leaving, I mean, I was very young, but I remember being very upset because I love this team, was the Toronto Toros, the WHA, when they left to go to Birmingham and become the Bulls. I was a huge Toros fan. But it wasn't as if there wasn't other hockey for me to watch between the Marlboros and the Maple Leafs. So I don't know, like, what does happen? Because it happened twice in Atlanta, right? First with the Flames, Calgary, and then with the Thrashers in Winnipeg. Like, what happens to you as a fan? Because you've been false started twice, essentially.
Yeah. If the Devils ever left Jersey, I don't think I'd still be a fan. I mean, I'm a fan of them because they were Jersey's team.
So hang on. So when they were originally going to go to Nashville, okay?
Yeah.
When they were originally going to go there, if they would have bailed, would you have bailed on hockey?
I don't think I would have bailed on hockey. I don't know what I would have done because I wasn't living down here in D.C. yet. Because, I mean, the obvious move is, like, you just adopt the local team of wherever you are as being the team that you follow, as long as you can find them palatable. You know, I'm not going to become if I'm living in Manhattan and the Devils leave, I ain't going to become a Ranger fan. You know, it's not going to happen. It's just in my lifeblood to not be a Ranger fan. I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have been a free agent for a little bit. Probably would have gone the Merrick route of rooting for players instead of for teams. But I definitely wouldn't have been a Devil. Like, I wouldn't have followed that team. My heart would not. I would not pull the Hartford Whalers move where you go to Carolina Hurricanes games and see Whalers jerseys down there. Like, I certainly
wouldn't do that, eh?
Dead to me. Yeah. In 95, when they were pushing for the Cup, and there were all these rumors about them leaving for Nashville and, you know, the team brass is checking out the arena down there and all this other stuff. Like, if they had left after that season, what a wonderful bow tied around that franchise. You win the Cup. Yeah, it's sad you leave, but you won the Cup and then you leave. And that would have been it. I'm not following them down there. I would root for certain players. You obviously would have wanted to see Marty do well and stuff like that, but by no means would I have still been a Devils fan. I don't know what I would have done. Like, if they moved to Quebec tomorrow, me living in Washington, D.C., I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'd necessarily become a Capitals fan. I mean, I hope the Capitals do well every year because I live here and I get to see more hockey live the further they go. It never works out. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'd do.
Charlie chimes in. We don't like Winnipeg. Most people became Bruins fans because they won that summer. Is that true?
That seems a little odd, doesn't it? Although that's it's like the 1970s aesthetic of if you grew up in the 70s, you were a Steelers fan because they were the best team in the 70s. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I was a Steelers fan too.
Uh-huh.
That's true. I love Lynn Swan. Oh, Swan and Bradshaw. Franco Harris. Oh, it's a good team. That was fun.
Yeah.
But what do I know? I mean, I was 8. They were a good team. What was it that Ken Dryden always said? Sports is the best when you're 12 years old. That's when you really form your memories and your attachments.
Wow. I never heard that line from Dryden.
Yeah, from Dryden. Yeah.
Sports is a great line.
always at its best when you're 12 years old.
That's the age
that he sort of isolated. You're the most impressionable, and everything around you is awesome.
You're the most impressionable. You're probably playing a sport at that point.
You're starting to get the hang of something. Yeah.
Yeah. Before many of us, and then either you know, you take that further or you become a sentient blogger from Central New Jersey who speaks into a microphone every day. That's a great point. I never thought about it that way.
Michael J. Anderson chimes in. As a North Stars fan, you quit on the NHL. I was 14 and played hockey, so I got my fill on the ice and watching lower leagues. It would seem as if, you know, in that state, you wouldn't have to give up on hockey since there's such a rich culture.
There's hockey all over the place.
Yeah, you kidding?
Right.
Just go be a bigger Gophers fan.
But then again, it also depends on how your team leaves. Like, I mean, if I was a Minnesota fan and the North Stars left, I would say F you to hockey, too. I mean, wouldn't you? You got boned.
Yeah, you got boned. You got boned. And even before that, you were getting threatened year after year.
It's a different deal if you don't draw or whatever, but, like, you know, taking a hockey team out of Minnesota is like a sin, isn't it?
Yeah, but they weren't drawn. I mean, rink was in the wrong place for one.
The Littlest Hobo writes in, so you're saying that if they turned their back on you, then you would be gone.
Hang on, who?
The Littlest Hobo said that on Twitter.
Is that at Bad Hobo? Because that Twitter feed is hilarious.
No, it's at Littlest underscore Hobo underscore.
Oh, speaking of the Littlest Hobo,
mm-hmm.
Guess who's doing a cover of the theme?
Tally?
Hell yeah.
Nice, very good.
That's her next offering.
I guess we should close out the opening segment by mentioning something Tally-related, which is that you and I actually won Game Show Friday.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but now you did. Hell yeah, we won Game Show Friday.
High five, brother man.
That's it. We know our show. We know our shiz. All right, we come correct on this project.
Tally screwed up. Dmitry Chesnikov actually was the Puck Daddy guest most frequently on this podcast. Right. And the order of the memes, which I believe were Random Penguin, Hologram Mr. Bill Masterton, Coffee Jerseys, was it?
I don't know.
And then I think the other one, there was another one too. I forget which one it was. But anyways, we got that right. And then she screwed up the order. So we actually won Game Show Friday. Now, right. I'm okay with everybody in the audience having their moment of catharsis where Merrick and I have tortured people every Friday last couple of years. You know, peppering them with impossible questions and then ridiculing them when they fail. So I'm happy that we got our comeuppance, but just know this. We know our own show. We won Game Show Friday.
I don't know. I'm not going to peacock this one, bud. I'm not going to be too proud. I'm not going to strut this one because, honestly, I was prepared to lose.
I will peacock this one like I am Joe Thornton on a four-goal night.
Like you're
okay?
I am ready to celebrate, sir. NBC logo. Like I'm Joe Thornton on a four-goal night. That's right. Stand back.
Stand back, ladies and gentlemen.
Visors,
Game Show Friday.
Visors down. Yep. Visors down.
Exactly. All right. Carl Alsner coming up on the show today. Question of the day, because if you saw Puck Daddy this morning, we did a story on the 13 most pleasant surprises in the National Hockey League this year. Sunshine, rainbows, puppy dogs, kisses, the happy stuff.
Hey.
What are the things you didn't see coming and now you're happy having seen them this year? Hey. Tomorrow on Puck Daddy, we'll get to the 13 most terrible disappointments, which is more in my wheelhouse. But I decided to put on a happy face and talk about the surprises, the happy things that have happened this year. Mrs. O's sends Josh Harding.
Yeah.
Fantastic answer.
Maybe the best
Fantastic
one.
Fantastic answer.
Maybe the best one right there.
John Vanderland, Jamie Benn, and Tyler Seguin are clicking like they were, like we were told they would. Jeremy Ballison, the play of Kyle Turris. Things are finally totally clicking for the guy. Great to see as a Sens fan. So on and so forth.
Joey August, by the way, chimes. This is a great one, too. And what a pass on that first goal last night. Hampus Lindholm. Who you know he's going to be this year? He is going to be this year's version of Jonas Brodin when it comes to Calder voting. He will be this year's Jonas Brodin. He's been great.
Turkey Freak, who must be very excited about Thanksgiving. The Avalanche not being terrible. Shitty teams aren't ever fun. Levi Hill, that Crosby hasn't been injured yet. The league needs him. And the play of Fleury, although I think, it, you know, as we'll get to later in the show, I think the play in front of Fleury has been as important as play of Fleury. Joe Gillespie with one that I included on my list, and it's one that might be under the radar considering how abjectly terrible his team has been for most of this year. Steve Mason. Steve Mason's been really good. His numbers are great.
Remember last year on the podcast when I said I haven't given up on Steve Mason yet? And you laughed me off the air.
I did.
I think it was just the sound of your laughter actually took us off the air that day. I'm honestly from watching him going, not to be that guy, but just watching him watch him develop going back to junior. There is such a good goaltender inside of Steve Mason.
I'm still
not ready to quit on this guy.
No, and you're absolutely right. We've never seen a Philadelphia Flyers goaltender have a flash of brilliance before sending into the toilet. Fred Yingling with one that you'd expect. Alex Steen, hands down. Always appreciated in St. Louis. Never got the recognition outside until now. I'd also mention his line mates in that equation. Backus and Oshie have been amazing.
Yep.
And then finally, Derek, for me, it's the resurgence of Christopher Kreider. I thought he was doomed to a Lundmarkian, Brendelian fate. Brendelian is such a great word. Oh, God. It's perfect.
I wish I knew what it meant. We're not going to do the
intro. Pavel Brendel.
We're not. Oh, fourth overall, Calgary Hitmen, New York Rangers. Okay, Brendel. Yeah, okay, yeah, I get that. Yeah, Neil Smith doesn't brag about that pick. We're going to forego the intro because our guest is standing by, so we'll do the intro later. How about that for a little bit of space?
Joining us now on the line, a Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast favorite, a defenseman for the Washington Capitals, and a man of many talents and likes and dislikes in this world. He is Carl Alsner, and he joins us once again on the podcast. Hello, Carl.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. Sorry about last night. The Penguins didn't let you guys have the puck very much, did they?
No, it wasn't very fun. It was like, felt like you're playing keep away with your older brother.
It was, and the one play finished off by Sidney Crosby. I mean, I don't know what it's like to be an NHLer. I don't know what it's like to be an NHL defenseman. But it seems as if there's just some teams, and your team's like this occasionally as well. Will you just kind of get mesmerized by the passing and just get mesmerized by the play? Does that still happen to an NHL player at your level, Carl?
Occasionally, yeah. When you're having one of your off nights, sometimes you just start following the puck and you're not thinking that step ahead like you're supposed to. And on that one play, that was, you know, we knew they were going to try something like that. We went over it in our video, and that was a big key. And that was just one of those ones where you knew it was happening, and you just couldn't stop it from happening. And, yeah, you know, good players are going to do that to you every now and then. It just sucks that it was against us and at such a crucial point of that game.
I know Brooks poo-pooed the OV Crosby rivalry thing, and I think in 2013 that's probably the right answer. But was there ever a time when you were able to appreciate this rivalry, or was it never a factor in your preparation for the Penguins?
It's always, I guess it's not the OV Crosby factor, the rivalry that I'm thinking about. It's more my own, I guess, personal Alsner Crosby rivalry that you could say. I'm going into every game thinking, you know what, I'm going to stop him. I need to shut him down. It's me versus him. And I try and think of it that way because it gets me, you know, a little bit more, even more amped up and trying to stop one of the best players in the world. That it's nice to have that, the heading on it, the Ovi Crosby, but I don't know, we don't really blow it up too big in the dressing room, so it's nice to have, but it's not big for us.
Is he the toughest guy one-on-one, Crosby?
Let me think. He's up there. I think personally Datsyuk is, in my opinion, they're both really good. I don't even know if you can say one's better than the other, but he's extremely tough. Yeah, he's just, he wants you to come after him so he can make a nice little backhand pass to somebody. It's pretty annoying.
You know, curious as well, just as a follow-up, dots down, it was always said that Gordie Howe had the heaviest stick. You just couldn't, like, when he hit the dots, he couldn't lift his stick up. Which player in the NHL is it almost impossible? Like, which player's stick gets the heaviest the deeper he gets into the offensive zone? A guy you just can't, whose stick you just can't lift up?
Oh, shoot, there's so many of them. I actually think Malkin's pretty good. He's clearly a big boy and smart, knows how to use the body and knows when to put some pressure on his stick. I'd say probably Malkin, in my opinion.
Are you surprised that you've apparently gone from the Southeast Division to the new Southeast Division based on the records of the Metropolitan Division?
Yeah, I weren't quite expecting that. I don't think anybody really was. But yeah, it's strange. I think some of the teams are starting to pick it up now, and will, by the end of the year, will be, you know, have pretty respectable records and stuff. But yeah, we weren't ready for that, but it's good for us. I mean, We're happy that we're in the hunt with the way we've been playing, so I guess that's all you can really ask for.
From a defenseman's point of view, your thoughts on the new icing rule?
I didn't vote in favor of it, and I'm still not 100% in favor of it. I understand why they wanted to do it, but I don't know. I think it takes away some of the excitement, some of the race, you know, those, especially the teams that have those guys that are really quick. You know, for us, Jason Chimera, it's nice to have him be able to beat a guy right at the last second instead of having it whistled down early. I don't know. That was one of the things for me coming in as a guy from junior. I was really excited to play with that that new icing reel. I thought it was awesome. So the fact that it's gone now, it takes away a little bit for me.
That's a great point, too. And people that don't know, coming from the Western Hockey League, one of the three junior loops in Canada, it's no-touch icing. So the puck goes down the ice, it hits the board, and only one guy skates, and that's the linesman to go and retrieve the puck. And it's curious, too, that you would say that, because this rule is sort of in place, or this new way to call icing is in place to protect you, but you don't want it in there.
Yeah, well, I like that it's there to protect us, but you know what? There's still gonna be a couple little things here and there where, you know, it's gonna maybe be a late call, or there's already been times where we're not quite sure if they're gonna call it, so you either let up or one guy keeps going and you think it's gonna be an icing, or the goalie doesn't know what's going on. There's just so much of gray area, and you gotta deal with it, but. I don't know. I like the old rule just because it was pretty clear. First guy back to touch the puck gets it. Now it's kind of up in the air, and it's debatable on some of the calls.
Carl Alsner, the blog Russian Machine Never Breaks, has been chronicling your post-game celebrations. One was a Hulk Hogan-esque hand to the ear.
Oh, that was great.
Another one was a bow and arrow. A third appeared like you were swinging Thor's mighty hammer. What's going on, sir? What is up with your celebrations?
Okay, so it started last year. Me and Matthew Pro were watching this video on a website, and it was of a college basketball player who didn't play a whole lot, but he got really excited when his team scored a nice basket or a dunk or an alley-oop or something like that. And so he would come jumping off the bench and do some sort of funny celebration or really animated celebration. And I said to Perry, I'm like, man, we have to do this when we win the shootout. And he agreed. He thought it was a great idea. So we did it the next game that we won in the shootout, and just so happened the camera caught him doing his, I don't even know what you'd call it, his maniac celebration. And so it kind of took off from there with him. And then the fact that he got traded, I kind of thought it'd be a nice thing to carry on that tradition a little bit. But it's gotten more than I was expecting, more attention than I was expecting, so I've eased up on it.
But do you have some in your hip pocket? Do you have, like, ideas down the road? Like, you do, like, a Usain Bolt tribute somewhere down the road? Like, do you have, like, a pocket full of these, or is it, you know, day of, you got to think of something to do?
I've thought of a couple, yeah, but it's actually kind of funny. If I see that the game, if we're in overtime and there's a chance for a shootout, I start thinking a little bit about what could be the next one. And we got a pretty good shootout team, so chances are usually, decent that we have a chance to win that. So it's I need to do a little bit more research if I am going to keep it going and get some new original celebrations.
Yeah, I mean, like, you've swung the hammer, you've shot the arrow. There's at least five other Avengers. So, I mean, you could do the Iron Man thing, you can do Hulk Smash. There's any number of things you can do.
You know what, Carl? There's a Finnish goaltender by the name of Matti Hoila who does some pretty cool celebrations after games, whether it's the Thriller Dance was one of his, the Fisherman was another one. You might want to check out Matti Hoila on YouTube. He's got some pretty creative ones.
I'll look at that. I don't want to steal anyone's ideas, but I'll definitely take a look and get some inspiration.
How about this one? You put your stick on the ice and pretend it's on fire. No one's ever done that before.
Well, actually, it's funny, too, because that comes from, and Carl will know that, that comes from Terry Ryan, who used to play in the Western League with the Tri-City Americans. Like, that was done in the Western League years before Alexander Ovechkin did it.
Yeah, it went over pretty good in our league when Ovi did it.
Carl Alsner, the Washington Capitals recently did something I'm sure you were fond of. They participated in a calendar in which they were photographed with dogs. You obviously are a dog lover, a man who owns dogs. Who was the most uncomfortable Capital around the dogs?
Probably Nick Backstrom. He doesn't really like dogs at all. I think he's got a little bit of a fear of dogs. So we always try to give him a puppy so it's a little easier to handle. John Erskine's got a dog too. He's got a little Pomeranian, and I don't think he doesn't have an issue with dogs, but it's pretty funny to watch him carry it because you can tell he clearly enjoys bigger dogs more, and so he kind of just grabs the thing like it's a little purse and just walks around with it. It's too funny.
little teacup dog with John Erskine.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense, right?
The guy that ran the table in the OHL. That's hilarious. What kind of dogs do you have?
I have two dachshunds and one Bernese Mountain Dog.
It's fantastic. Those are great dogs. That's awesome. Yeah, they are. You know, I'm curious to, not to dwell too much on Junior, but you played with 4 years with the Calgary Hitmen. Do you still keep in touch? I mean, Junior, you really form a bond with a lot of your players. So do you still keep in touch with guys that are in the NHL now that you played, you know, on the Hitmen with, like Gagliardi or Seabrook or any of these guys?
Yeah, I do. I see Gally in the summer. Skate with him every now and then. I had Ryan White out at our wedding a couple of summers ago. I went for dinner with Michael Stone. We were in Phoenix. I see Ian Schultz and Carson McMillan, who've been in the American League there. I keep in touch with quite a few guys, as many as possible. It's we, like you said, such a good relationship. We've been through a lot, and Junior's such a fun time of your career. So, yeah, I try to keep in touch with them as much as possible.
I have no idea what the context of this is, but I've been told to ask you this by one of our listeners, Andrew Tomlinson. Ask Carl about the gummy worms in the airport and how he met his wife.
Oh, gummy worms. Starburst, he means.
Starburst, yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, just kind of quickly, I guess. So I saw her in the airport and, kind of nervous. We didn't really know what to say. And so me and my buddies that I was with offered her and her cousin some Starburst just to kind of break the ice and start the conversation. And we thought it would be a great way to start it. And she said no. And she didn't like the flavors that we had. so that's kind of why. But it's pretty funny. That story's gone around a little bit now, and it's fun to laugh about it, the way it all went down. And, yeah, it was a good story, I guess.
Oh, Carl, our QOD here on the podcast today, what is the most pleasant thing so far about the season? We'll get to the negativity on tomorrow's podcast. From your point of view, what's the most pleasant thing about the year so far at the quarter pool?
I think it's probably the way we've been playing at home lately. One thing that we really enjoy is putting on a good show and getting some wins in our rink. And I think a big part of that is seeing Ovi score a ton of goals lately. It's great to see. It's no secret when he's playing good, our team's playing good. So I'd say that's been pretty pleasant.
Last one for me, Carl, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. What do you think about Braden Holtby making this Canadian Olympic team as a proud Canadian? Do you think he's got a shot at being the third guy on that totem pole heading over to Sochi?
You know what, I really do. I wasn't sure at first, just with him being as young as he is and goalie being the toughest position. I wasn't quite sure if he was going to have a legitimate opportunity. But you know what, I really think that he does. He's been playing great hockey. He definitely deserves it. He can. He doesn't seem to get nervous, and he's able to handle a lot of pressure. So I think so. I think it would be great for his confidence if he did get the nod just to go and experience that. But you never know. Never know how it's going to shake down.
You know, sticking with that, and last one from this microphone, Carl, thanks for your time, as always, one of our favorite guests. What did you think of the Mike Babcock ball hockey in Calgary? I was there with Nick Kyprios and Doug McLean, and we were kind of scratching our heads the 2 days of ball hockey. What did you think of it?
Well, it was definitely strange at first to hear about it, and it was tough to really run around out there because that floor was really slippery. But in the end, I think it was pretty good, just because you get to see. It's one thing to go in the video room and watch what the coach wants you to do for systems and to draw it on the board, but it's a whole other thing to actually go out and do it. And for us, it's way easier to remember exactly what he wants. So, in the end, it was probably a good thing, but it was definitely a weird concept, and everyone had fun laughing about it.
Did you guys have anything on the soles of your shoes? Like anything sticky?
No. We just, as we walked out, they had those little sticky pads that the basketball players will step on to take all the dust off. But
it
didn't matter.
That was that sound, because we could hear it all the way up at the top where we were stationed. Like, what is going on? Because as you guys were coming through the bench, you had like these, every guy, it sounded like you had like something sticky on the bottom of your shoes, but I guess that was it. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it didn't really work that good, but it was a good thought.
All right, finally, what are you watching on the road these days?
Well, I just finished up the final season of The Wire, and it was unbelievable. The show is got to be one of the best of all time. And it was funny because I just drove through Baltimore the other day because I really wanted to see what it actually was like, and they capture it pretty damn good.
It's very, as a man who has spent some time in Baltimore, it's very true to life, sir.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. And now I'm on to the last season of Suits. Those are the ones I watch on the road. I got my home lineup, but those have been my road shows so far.
So were you watching The Wire because you really wanted to brush up on what municipal politics was like in the city of Toronto? Is that why?
Yeah, I guess, eh? I try and stay out of the politics game.
All right, well, make sure you remember all of that Baltimore education when they stick you guys in Baltimore for the Winter Classic next year, sir.
Thanks, Carl.
The great Carl Alsner, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Still.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Carl Alsner, still, as far as hockey players go, still one of, if not the best hockey guys. Like, whenever I'll talk to a producer for another radio show or, you know, television per se, who should we get? Who should we talk to? Always. First name out of my mouth. Used to be, now who did it used to be? Used to be Chad LaRose. Now it's Carl Alsner. Still the finest interview going.
Heard from a little bird last night that Winter Classic next year might be up north. Might be up in Baltimore instead of D.C.
Really, eh? So that wasn't just that wasn't just something you were pulling out of your ass. Like you're that's
no, sir.
Really, eh?
Now I've been banging the Camden Yards drum. I don't think that would happen.
Oh God, that'd be awesome.
But there of course is another stadium in the Baltimore area.
Hang on, why not Camden Yards? Why not Camden Yards? From someone who's ignorant.
First off, because I don't know if this would factor into it or not, but there's still a very, very deep-seated political hatred of Baltimore because of baseball, because Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, kept baseball from returning to D.C. for so long. And so there's an idea that if you went and played a game like that in Camden Yards rather than the Nationals Park here in D.C., it'd be traitorous. Now, that said, there is a football stadium there. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I think more people would rather see the Capitals in that football stadium than that monstrosity the Redskins built and not give Daniel Snyder any money. Oh, yeah. So maybe a little M&T Bank Stadium action for the Capitals
really,
next year.
Yeah.
Against who?
Oh, Pittsburgh Penguins.
I don't think so.
Rangers.
Possibly. Mm. Oh, God, could you imagine again? Like, they play each other in the playoffs like every year. Probably again this season, too. Mm-hmm. I would say either Philly or Boston. You need to get somebody from the East Coast that's going to bring fans to this game, right? Mm-hmm. Islanders, Devils, whatever, right? But, like, Boston, Philly, Rangers to me would be the three that you're looking at. I don't think they're going to go to Pittsburgh again. I really don't. I don't think they're going to do the Sid Ovi thing on the Winter Classic again and bang that drum again.
Yeah, I agree. I could see Rangers. I could really see Rangers.
You could use the Penguins as the team that puts over another team in an outdoor game. Because remember, the plan, I think, is going to be Winter Classic, occasional Heritage Classic, but do another outdoor game at some point during the season for those markets that don't get Winter Classics, be it Minnesota, Colorado.
Did you just use a wrestling booking reference? The Pittsburgh Penguins putting over, like, some other team out there that needs the rub from the Penguins?
They don't, but isn't that true, though?
I'm not saying it's not true.
Yeah.
When I hear it. I'm not saying it's not true.
Give him the rub.
It's just funny to hear.
Need to put him over.
Mm-hmm.
Without question. Well, I mean, it's the same thing as what they do on television sometimes on NBC. Is, you know, the Detroit Red Wings forever for the Western Conference before realignment, they put over Western Conference teams that nobody gave a shit about. Right?
Is that how, like, on Rivalry Night a couple weeks ago they had Detroit and Buffalo?
Oh, the vicious Detroit and Buffalo rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
NHL rivals.
Ooh, I get them going. Section 328, by the way. F you. Quote, not to dwell too much on junior hockey, said Jeff Merrick lying his ass off. That's really funny.
I'm telling you, man.
That's a good tweet.
Baltimore Winter Classic.
Baltimore,
Katie
right?
Brown. I'm gonna be cool pissed if the Winter Classic is in Baltimore next year, as Wyshynski says he's heard. I'm already ragey thinking about it. Get ready, Caps fans.
Really?
You're gonna be ragey.
That'd
oh boy. I'm not saying it's a done deal. I'm just saying that they have not announced the venue for the Winter Classic next season, and I find that to be a little odd. Don't you? No? Mm. Yeah? I mean, you know,
when do they normally announce it?
Isn't it
late in January they normally announce it?
It's a weird deal because they usually announce the city and the venue at the same time, don't they? It's not like Boston was ever not Fenway. Chicago was never not Wrigley.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know?
That's true.
I guess maybe there was some talk about where the Philly game was going to be. I don't know. I can only tell you what I hear.
Just pass.
And I was ahead of the curve. I said Camden Yards many, many moons ago when they announced this game. I said, have it in Camden Yards. It's perfect. It's a picturesque ballpark. It's an interesting location. Having the Winter Classic in a quote unquote neutral site would be interesting. There's a chance it could happen. I don't know if Camden Yards is going to be the place, probably the football stadium, but it's a possibility. It's what I hear. I hear these things.
All right, just passing it along. That's okay. You know, without prejudice, without favor, just passing it along. Very good, Greg.
Not to make this Cavs centric, by the way, because as you know, they are my favorite team, according to all the Puck Daddy commenters.
Because you go to the games.
But here's the thing about the Penguins and Cavs last night, which by the way was a total domination by the Penguins. You don't want to put too much stock into any regular season game, but that was a complete embarrassment for the Capitals last night. On national television, heavily hyped game, Pierre Maguire between the benches, all that jive. Oh, by the way, Pierre Maguire and I agree on something. I don't know if you knew that, Merrick.
What's that?
We are both in favor of a coach's challenge. Me and Pierre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both want to slow down the game some more. Okay.
Here's what we don't agree. I don't think it's cool to wear your Penguins Stanley Cup ring when interviewing Adam Oates on the bench.
Oh, did he have it on?
I'm just saying maybe you leave it at home. I mean, we all know you have one, and you're very prestigious, and we all appreciate that. But maybe just not wear it to that game.
If I ever won the Stanley Cup, and you are the same way, you would wear it everywhere. You would never take that thing off. You would try to find a way to weld it onto your body. I can never fault someone for that.
I made a dramatic miscalculation here. I live in the United States. No one gives a shit.
Okay.
What's that thing over on your hand
there?
Super Bowl ring? No, it's actually my Stanley Cup championship ring. I won it with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The what now?
That's the first time you've ever said Stanley Cup properly. Right there.
Y'all hide your coke in there? No, I don't hide any coke in there, sir. Aw, that's too bad. Looks like you could hide a lot of coke in there.
You hide your weed in that thing?
You put your weed in it.
Just put your hash in there?
What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Penguins. So, Marc-Andre Fleury played okay last night. He did some really good things last night. Positioning
18
was great.
Shots. Come on. That's it.
But that's the thing. I mean, I've this is my first time seeing the Penguins live this year, so not within the narrow scope of the television camera. Boy, does Jacques Martin have them playing Jacques Martin hockey.
Wow.
All over the ice.
But it wasn't until, they were up 3 Cobb after the Crosby goal, then it was, okay, let's drill this thing down. And it was almost as if Dan Bylsma was standing behind the bench, but that was okay, guys. We're playing.
Their positioning around Fleury, their responsibility in front of Fleury, the way that they're passing out of the zone, a lot of it is different than what I saw last year from this team, and especially in the postseason where it was kind of a shit show at times. They look really, really well organized in the back end. And their puck possession last night was extraordinary.
Let me ask you a question.
You want to beat the Capitals? Don't give them the puck. And they didn't get the puck last night.
Yeah, keep it away. Let me ask you this then. Last night I worked the Calgary Flames Columbus Blue Jackets game. Not exactly the most exciting game on the schedule so far this season, but it's one of those things that you understand why Columbus had to play that specific way after the beating they got the night before at the hands of the other team in Alberta. But, you know, the rumors are out there, the whispers are out there that, you know, this coaching staff, you know, may end up getting the punt. Maybe sooner than later. If they don't make the playoffs this year, maybe they wait till the end of the year. Maybe they do it sometime mid-season. Who knows? But if they do end up making a change behind the bench, could you see Jacques Martin going in there? And the reason I say that is you always look for associations and, you know, where guys have worked with one another and familiarity and trust. Mm-hmm. And Jacques Martin and Kekalainen were together in Ottawa. Would it surprise you to see Jacques Martin behind the bench in Columbus?
No, and I was trying to figure out who would be the guy they would bring in there. Like, who was the guy with ties? Like, I was thinking, I couldn't think of anybody. Like, I was thinking, like, Andy Murray, but Andy Murray, I think, was turfed after Davidson came to St. Louis,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. That's a good choice.
I don't know. Just throw it out. I'm honestly not basing that. I mean, not like Wish, a little bird didn't tell me anything. I'm just idle speculation and chatter on a podcast. That's all that was.
It was interesting to see the comments from Kekalainen, by the way, this week about leadership and lack thereof. Right. You know, we talked to Adrian Aucoin yesterday, and he specifically mentioned Aucoin as one of those guys that when he left, when he retired, when he wasn't re-signed or whatever, that leadership left. Yeah. There's a lot of kids on that team. There's a lot more kids on that team this year than last year. And I think it's more along the lines of not going out and finding the veteran to bring into that room, but asking more of the veterans that are there who aren't providing leadership right now.
RJ Umberger was kind of supposed to be that guy, wasn't he?
Well, that's why you signed him for the contract they signed him for.
Yeah.
Right?
And I can see somewhere down the road, just when you look at the player, the person, the family, can't you see Nick Foligno being that guy somewhere down the road for Columbus? I can.
Sure. But you have other guys on that team too, like guys making a lot of dough that you expect to be the leadership core of that team. And
yeah.
Now you're, but here's the thing. It ain't Kekalainen's core. That's Scott Housen's core that he built, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
So it's
and they
it's
couldn't gonna, they, I mean, and it's, they and they couldn't really make a move last year because the team, even though they ultimately didn't make the playoffs, the team was on a great run, right? Like you couldn't do the excavation of this team. You couldn't do it last year.
What do you do with Gaborik? I mean, he's terrible this year. He's hurt now.
Yeah.
What do you do with him? You bring him back?
Depends what the ticket is, no?
You probably get a ticket somewhere else.
Gonna get his, you know? Yeah, he'll get his money somewhere. People want goals.
That's a,
I know.
It's looking like kind of a bad deal. Rangers got some pieces for that trade. You
yes,
know?
He did.
And they didn't make the playoffs. That's the real thing. Like, if Gaborik goes and for nothing, and they didn't make the playoffs having put all their chips in to try to get in, that's a pretty bad trade then. Because you gave up some pretty decent pieces for him.
Yeah, you did. I wonder what this team's going to be like when Nathan Horton joins the mix. Speaking of big tickets.
Well, that's the hope, right? And again, it's two hopes for the Blue Jackets right now. The first is that Nathan Horton comes back and all of a sudden the offense that's moribund right now gets kickstarted. The other hope is that you are in the most shit-tastic division in professional sports, where right now the Columbus Blue Jackets and Philadelphia Flyers, two teams that are abject failures this season, are a scant 1 and 2 points respectively out of the fourth seed. It's insane.
Yeah.
The Devils are in a playoff. The Devils are the 3 seed.
Yeah.
That was a good, but here's the thing about the Devils that I'll give them credit for, okay? When they were picking up points, 5 overtime losses, they had an overtime win last night. They've been picking up points in games that they might have otherwise lost last year, and it's mattering right now. I mean, that's why they're third right now, is all these little loser points they're picking up here and there. Listen, I'm not a loser point fan. I am a shootout fan. So it's very difficult for me to be a Devils fan sometimes because they are the antithesis of everything that I like in hockey, okay?
Yeah.
But that said, 21 points in 21 games is strictly because they've been picking up loser points while other teams are not picking them up. Ditto Detroit. 7 overtime losses for Detroit.
Yeah, it's bad.
25 news. Points in the season.
Tonight's actually a big one for the Detroit Red Wings against the Carolina Hurricanes. This is actually a pretty big game. Pretty big game for the Detroit Red Wings. All right, 9-6-7. Like, you have to start to put something together here.
-8 goal differential for them so far this season.
That's surprising, isn't it?
It is. Best goal differential in the National Hockey League at this moment is
St. Louis.
St. Louis +23.
Is it
the worst? The worst goal differential Edmonton. In the
gotta
National Hockey League right now.
Got to be Edmonton.
Oh, does it got to be Edmonton? Got to be Edmonton, huh?
I don't know. Yeah,
how
yeah,
dare
yeah,
you
yeah,
disrespect
yeah.
the work that Dallas Eakins has done there, sir? It is, of course, the Buffalo Sabres with a negative 30. Minus 30. Like the temperature in Edmonton, but not like their goal differential.
Hey, if you're any other general manager in the NHL, as Buffalo hunts for a GM, shouldn't you be putting the full court press on Pat LaFontaine right now and calling him nonstop to make a trade?
Totally, right?
What do you think?
Right?
Try to get one of those young kids. Come on. Put something on the hook for him.
So the guy, who's the cat they asked,
Jim Benning
permission for from
Jim Benning,
yeah, Jim Benning from Jim the Benning. Boston Bruins is the guy that they've asked for. Jim Benning, of course, to the surprise of no one, has ties to Buffalo, I believe, and also a Stanley Cup ring, which were the two things that LaFontaine was looking for in a candidate. Well, I mean, he said he's looking for a Stanley Cup ring. We all know what the guy paying the salary is looking for. He's looking for a Buffalo tie.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Benny, you know, Benny would be a good trade. Claude Loiselle, I think somewhere down the road is going to be a GM in the NHL. Don't know that it's going to be with the Buffalo Sabres. The Botterill story is well told. I don't know. What do you get? Because I keep hearing conflicting things on Rick Dudley. Because it just seems like the obvious choice.
Right.
He's so tightly associated with the Buffalo Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That hair, that mustache, that bandana, bring it back. I'm so tightly associated with the Sabres. It almost seemed like the no-brainer, but then, I don't know, I keep hearing Botterill, I keep hearing Benning. I don't know. It's a team right now that's got to rely on its scouting, and I'll put Rick Dudley's eye against just about anybody in the NHL when it comes to scouting.
Totally.
Oh.
Totally. All right. Question of the day was, what's been your most pleasant surprises this season in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, we got about 8 minutes to do this. I gotta go do Tim and Sid.
Oh,
I know.
Mr. Big Time.
I know, big timer. Oh, you hopped off early yesterday to do Washington radio.
That's true.
Big timer.
John Stanfield writes in, Cam Fowler. He has been nothing but disappointing since his rookie season, and now he is playing the toughest minutes on the team. First unit PK and is on pace for 40 points. And on top of all of this, he is now the deepest he's ever been in a season as a positive plus-minus player, not to mention he probably has played his way to Sochi based on his performance this season.
Has he?
Thanks, you silly bastards. John, last name withheld. Random Penguin and Ducks' own goal scorer, Ben Lovejoy. Oh, that was a brutal one.
Yeah, that was tough. That was a tough one. Hey, how Francois Beauchemin? Did you hear anything about the injury?
No. Okay. Have you?
No. I have not. No.
Could be a biggie.
Yes.
Could be a biggie. Tom G writes in, Timmy Thomas. He surprised a lot of people this year. Although, when you think about it, he shouldn't have. I can just see Timmy coming in during the third period of the gold medal game in Sochi and winning it for the U.S. Can you imagine the media shit blizzard back at the White House? Must see TV.
Winning gold medal and Tim Thomas still refuses to go.
Oh, yes. Wow.
The hockey hitman, Ben Bishop. Amen to that. He's been remarkable. And somewhere Edmonton is saying, damn it, that should be our guy.
Aaron Offinger writes in, my most pleasant surprise of the season so far has been my beloved Dallas Stars. They score goals in bunches, get amazing goaltending, and have a positive goal differential for once. Being a Selke candidate and seeing Sagan be an overall good guy has also been pretty nice. But the sobering reality is that anything under 650, 700 this year in the West is going to mean that we're still a goddamn bubble team. Yeah, but what are you going to do? I mean, like, the West is insane. Anybody who misses the playoffs in the Western Conference, it doesn't mean that you had a bad season. It just means that there were four other teams in your division that were better and eight more teams in the conference that were better. And the conference is insanely good. Mm-hmm. Being ninth is not going to mean you had a bad season in the Western Conference this year, correct?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, geez. I mean, there have been some pretty upset teams in the Western Conference when you look at who makes it in the East, right?
Yeah.
Here's one, and I'm surprised you haven't got more of these, though we had a few. Matt Stendardi says the Sabres finally getting rid of Darcy.
Oh, yeah. And bringing in LaFontaine. I mean, that's got to me, it's the pleasant surprise on the one hand is firing Darcy, But on the other hand, it's bringing in a guy who was a fan favorite for the organization. It's going to be a nice, pleasant surprise versus bringing in some retread or random from another organization. Nathaniel Siegel, the Tampa Bay Lightning are my pleasant surprise. They are second in the East and basically the Louis Erickson of teams. Everybody says they're the most underrated. In the spirit of this being a hockey podcast, I think you guys lost Game Show Friday. As the Sharks learned against Buffalo, if you score a goal and nobody notices it until later, it actually doesn't count.
That's good.
True. Andrew, I'm not, dude, your last name's got like six I's and a J and it looks like a junior jumble. Andre writes in response to your earlier conversation on fans of former and relocated teams, thought you may be interested in reading, not on the air, of course, an academic study on the subject by my former supervisor, Dr. Craig Hyatt. Who do I root for now? The impact of franchise relocation on the loyal fans left behind. A case study of the Hartford Whalers. Wow. I'm going to forward that to you.
Yeah, please.
That looks kind of cool.
Please. Please to be sending.
I will definitely send that to you. Eric Morris, what about concussion?
Wow. And like
currently,
that,
this is about,
oh, you're back. You're turning into you're turning into me on the podcast. You just vanished for like 3 or 4 seconds.
Sorry, I this was a confusing one that I was going to read to you, but I think it's more like a on the download kind of thing.
Okay.
Let's see if there's anything else there. Here's David. This is on our goalie discussion yesterday. David Glandorf writes in, enjoyed the talk on marketing goalies yesterday. It is interesting to consider whether casual fans would resonate with goalie-based promos, but I'd also wonder about the other end of the spectrum. Hardcore stats-based fans might find it curious also. Seems like much of the advanced stats is about dismissing the role, the skill, or at least the predictability of the goaltender. When advanced stats people talk about one team outplaying the other, they're discussing some type of shot-centered stat as though the goalie isn't part of the team but some random element. I think they might find a goalie-focused promotion to be ridiculous. Of course, they're going to watch the game regardless, unless they just follow the box scores from their parents' basement, nerds. Oh, come on now. That's not true. I saw Neil Greenberg in the press box yesterday. That's an excellent point, and actually brings me to another point I tried to make on Twitter earlier today. I don't believe in strength of schedule being anything that people should waste time worrying about, because there's so much context lost when you simply reduce a team to its record, yeah, that it's a nonsensical stat. Like, for example, I'll give you two words that I gave Colby Koch earlier today. Backup goalies. Okay. If a team is, if a team is 15-5 right now, but their starting goaltender played 18 times and then you see the other guy,
mm-hmm,
team's still 15-5, but sure as shit is a different team than the record would indicate if it doesn't have a starter in there. So there's all these variables that come into play with strength of schedule that I really don't think, like.
Is there a way, and I ask honestly because I don't know the answer to this, is there a way to quantify that in a sabermetric?
There probably is, but I mean, based on the way it's calculated now, I think it's a faulty stat. Anyone can look at a division and say the Pacific is tougher than the Metro Terrible. We all know it is, okay? Anyone can look at the Western Conference and say they've been beating up on the Eastern Conference. It's very easy, but the idea that we're going to quantify this stuff and try to make it anything academic when there are all these variables from injured stars to backup goalies that can change one game from the next, I mean, come on now. It's a little bit, I don't know. I think it's a waste of time, but I don't think it's a waste of time in football when there's like 16 games. I think it's a complete waste of time in hockey.
Yeah, schedule, travel, backup netminder, injuries, streaks. I don't know. Is there a way to quantify it? I ask out of ignorance. I don't know. I don't think so. And I don't put much stock in keeping that type of stat. But I don't know. I just don't know.
All right. Well, there's the show for today.
I got a punt. I'm getting heavy on time. What are we doing tomorrow?
What are we doing tomorrow? Game Show Friday.
Okay. Do we have a guest for tomorrow?
We'll probably find one. I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of SportsNet tonight doing Hockey Central. You want to do E.J. Raddick tomorrow? Okay, we'll get E.J. Raddick. We'll see if we can get E.J. Raddick tomorrow. Hockey Central tonight, and then in a couple of minutes, Tim and Sid.
Awesome. I'm on the stick tonight for much hockey, including The Devils against the Kings. Scrivens versus who is the question? Schneider, maybe? I don't know.
Ooh. And pay attention to Tally Deshane's Twitter feed today. I think we may get a Littlest Hobo.
And also Tampa Bay and San Jose, and also Colorado and Phoenix, and also, as Merrick mentioned, Carolina and Detroit. A fun night at the rink for all these teams. Also, St. Louis and Boston. There better be some lumber laid out there. There better be some big hits for those good Canadian boys. Big punches thrown.
Lumber? Who uses lumber anymore? We talked about this with a coin.
Oh, Jesus, I forgot. Better be some composite thrown around.
There you go.
Yay.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.